France, 1815 to 1840, the years between the two burials. Today's topic is Louis-Philippe's France, 1832 to 1834. Now, the new regime, after 1832, might not have survived its growing pains if it had to rely on the first government. Its leading figure, insofar as there was one, was the banker, Lafitte, but his conduct of affairs was so notoriously incompetent that he was forced to resign. Since France could not yet afford the weak government that Louis-Philippe really preferred, power fell into the hands of the most forceful of the existing ministers. This was Casimir Perier, who declared that his policy was to combine order with liberty. Unfortunately, there's little doubt that the emphasis was on the former and not the latter. France, he said, must be governed. In the elections of July of 1831, Casimir Perier made it clear that his government had no intentions of being neutral. The perfects were instructed to use all their influence to secure the return of suitable candidates, though everyone was so new and untried that they found it difficult to know who was suitable. However, the great majority in the new chamber was conservative and prepared to accept the strong hand, so long as there seemed any danger of reaction or further revolution. Of the two bankers who had been patrons and perhaps financiers of the liberal movement under Charles X, Lafitte inclined to the left, whereas Perrier, who regarded 1830 as not a change of systems but only of person, was a leader of the resistance to any liberal concessions. Naturally, whereas Lafitte had left the reputation of a weak minister, Perrier was able to justify his reputation as a strong man. The new president of the council also found his task of pacifying France facilitated by the ending of the economic slump. Louis-Philippe, however, whose position was now becoming secure, was not altogether happy with a strong minister who kept him out of cabinet discussions, and it was perhaps a relief to him when the cholera epidemic, failing to observe the strict class discrimination of the Perrier regiment, carried off his prime minister in May of 1832. Although the struggle to put curbs on the revolution had now, in effect, been won, the Republican secret societies were still agitating, and there was a good deal of repressed popular discontent. The government determined to take the offensive. Popular associations were attacked by direct prohibitions, by extending penalties from the organizers to all members, and by transferring trials arising out of breaches of the laws against political associations to courts without juries. The debate on these proposals suggested that the prime motive behind the new laws was the fear of political revolution. The insecurity of the regime was still such that all opposition seemed dangerous. Resistance, declared Guizot, is turned by the opposition leaders into revolution. Thiers described the opposition as an illegal government, prepared to use the associations to overthrow the legal government. And in fact, the Society of the Rights of Man was planning an armed uprising, and a secret committee was formed to organize it. But in the event, the government itself was responsible for provoking the armed outbreak. Lyon was once again the scene of major disturbances. In February of 1834, the silk merchants once again reduced their rate of payment to the weavers. A 10-day strike failed, and the silk weavers returned to work. The city was peaceful, and then the government arrested 6 leaders of the strike, and anticipating opposition that this action was bound to arouse, sent 10,000 troops to occupy the strategic positions and chief buildings of Lyon. Sporadic rioting broke out, and as so often, the authorities only offered a weak resistance until the insurrection had been thoroughly developed. This often attributed to callous calculations. It seems more likely to have been due to a natural slowness to react, and perhaps simple stupidity. The rising, having been allowed to develop, was then ruthlessly crushed. A merciless struggle went on for 4 days. The royal troops gradually forced their way back into the town, while the forts on the outskirts bombarded the rebel-held quarters of the city. As the news of the revolt in Lyon, troubles also broke out in many other towns. But only in Paris was there an attempt at actual insurrection. There, in the quarter of the Marais, some desperate Republicans and their followers erected barricades. Paris had a large large garrison, and a National Guard which feared social revolution and the revolt of the workers more than anything else. They descended on the tiny nucleus of revolution, crushed it without difficulty, and proceeded to engage in a little private massacre in the Rue Transsinonienne. Daumier made one of his most pathetically effective cartoons of it. The government might defend the action of its supporters on the plea that it was just that those who had appealed to force should perish by force. Another view might be what happened in Paris was an attempt to exploit the genuine economic grievances of the workers by a small faction of political Republicans. And yet a third view is that the Republicans had played into the hands of the authorities, who were not sorry to have the chance of damning the workers of Lyon as revolutionary Republicans for their attempt to defend their standard of living, and the Republicans of Paris as social revolutionaries because of their connections with the workers' movement. After the failure of this pathetic attempt at a revolution, out of 3,000 prisoners, rather over 100 were selected for trial, which is kind of a moderate measure of repression compared with the sequel, The Social Struggles, later in the century, when class hatred had become much more intense. And after the danger, or supposed danger, was over, public sympathies began to veer onto the side of the accused, whose trial was thoroughly mismanaged. 28 of them escaped from prison, and apart from a number of sentences to deportation or imprisonment, most of the prisoners were only condemned to periods of police supervision. On the whole, in spite of the massacre, the Republicans had been discredited themselves by the events of 1834, and the government had behaved to some extent with comparative moderation. Well, at this point, we're approaching 1835. We're only about 5 years away from Napoleon's return. So next, we'll be looking at a little bit more about Louis-Philippe himself and some discussion about Bonapartism prior to 1840. Now, the sources for this, The History of Modern France by Cobon, The History of France by Guizot, The History of France by Thiers, History of the Modern World by Palmer Colton. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.